And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. I'm really glad to be with you. It's a beautiful Saturday morning. You can tell the temperature is a little bit cooler than what it normally is, but it's a great, great day outside, and I hope that you have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. What I want to do is I want to start off with a passage in the book of 1 Samuel, chapter 14, beginning in verse 1. Now it happened one day that Jonathan, the son of Saul, said to the young man who bore his armor, "Come, let us go over to the Philistines' garrison that is on the other side." But he did not tell his father. And Saul was sitting in the outskirts of Gibeah under a pomegranate tree, which is in Migron. The people who were with him were about 600 men. Ahijah, the son of Ahitub, Ichabod's brother, the son of Phinehas, the son of Eli, the Lord's priest in Shiloh, was wearing an ephod, or ephod. But the people did not know that Jonathan had gone. Between the passes by which Jonathan sought to go over to the Philistines' garrison, there was a sharp rock on the one side and a sharp rock on the other side. And the name of the one was Bozez, and the name of the other, Sina. The front of one faced northward opposite Michmash, and the other southward opposite of Gibeah. Then Jonathan said to the young man who bore his armor, "Come, let us go over to the garrison of these uncircumcised. It may be that the Lord will work for us. For nothing restrains the Lord from saving by many or by few." So his armor-bearer said to him, "Do all that is in your heart. Go then. Here I am with you according to your heart." Then Jonathan said, "Very well. Let us cross over to these men, and we will show ourselves to them. If they say thus to us, 'Wait until we come to you,' then we will stand still in our place and not go up to them. But if they say thus, 'Come up to us,' then we will go up. For the Lord has delivered them into our hand, and this will be a sign to us." So both of them showed themselves to the garrison of the Philistines, and the Philistines said, "Look, the Hebrews are coming out of the holes where they have hidden." Then the men of the garrison called to Jonathan and his armor-bearer and said, "Come up to us, and we will show you something." Oh, boy. Jonathan said to his armor-bearer, "Come up after me, for the Lord has delivered them into the hand of Israel." And Jonathan climbed up on his hands and knees with his armor-bearer after him. And they fell before Jonathan. And as he came up after him, his armor-bearer killed them. That first slaughter which Jonathan and his armor-bearer made was about 20 men within about a half of an acre of land. Now what we're going to do is skip over to verse 24. I know I'm skipping some of the story, but if you want to read it, 1 Samuel chapter 14. Here's the part that I want you to consider. Verse 24. And the men of Israel were distressed that day, for Saul had placed the people under an oath, saying, "Cursed is the man who eats any food until evening, before I have taken vengeance on my enemies." So none of the people tasted food. Now all the people of the land came to a forest, and there was honey on the ground. And when the people had come into the woods, there was the honey, dripping. But no one put his hand to his mouth, for the people feared the oath. But Jonathan had not heard his father charge the people with the oath. Therefore, he stretched out the end of the rod that was in his hand, and he dipped it in the honeycomb. And he put his hand to his mouth, and his countenance brightened. There's our story today. What's the point? I want to talk to you about honey just for a little bit. I know you can go into the grocery store, and you can purchase clover honey, you can find orange blossom honey. What was the other one I saw the other day? But what I want to suggest to you is we are living in a time that we encounter just an incredible amount of toxins and poisons at every turn. And sometimes you don't know who to trust and who to believe, and other times you just don't even know what's in the food that you're buying. So the topic this morning on Health Essentials is I want to talk to you about honey just a little bit. And what I've done is I've tried to look up several tidbits of research, and I can promise you right now, there is no way on God's green earth that I can even come remotely close to reading all the information that I've uncovered about honey. I don't even think I've scratched the surface, but it's incredible. And so before modern man came along, what did honeybees do? They went from blossom to blossom, and they had this huge, incredible variety of nectar and nutrients and elements they would collect from each unique individual flower. So I've had many people tell me that there is a pesticide. I personally have never heard of it before. It's known as Roundup. Have you ever heard of a chemical called Roundup? If I'm not mistaken, it might be called glyphosate. Anyway, you know I'm teasing about that. But glyphosate, oh my goodness. If you start doing literature searches, you could find out that if you've had contact with this particular chemical that's normally used on wildflowers and or what they might call a weed, this chemical is becoming more and more famous for contributing or causing the development of a blood-borne cancer called a lymphoma. Quite often you'll hear about a non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. I don't know anybody that wants either themselves or a loved one or a friend or even an enemy to develop a cancer. No, not at all. You know what the treatments are for lymphoma? They're all bad. That's just my opinion. Of course, I'm very, very biased. I'm so biased, as a matter of fact, that I'm into what has God placed upon the earth that will actually favorably allow us to heal our bodies. If you did not believe that God has designed our bodies to heal and that He loves us so much that He's given us all these plants, then you wouldn't be listening to this program today. I'm so biased that way. And so what I want to do is I want to give you a simple sales pitch this morning. I read a study, I don't have it in front of me, but they went into grocery stores and they tested every type of honey to see if it was pure honey. And I'll just say this, it's shocking. 75% of them are not honey. And the ones most likely not to be pure honey are the ones that look extremely clear. Almost as if it's a pure liquid gold. Sometimes people go to restaurants where they have honey on the table and you could add honey to maybe a sopapilla or a tortilla. Or maybe there's another reason why honey's there for. Maybe to sweeten tea. I don't know. But you can bet your bottom dollar if you look at the honey on the table and the honey is very, very clear, then most likely the manufacturer or the processor has removed all the incredible elements that might actually have a tremendous value toward healing a suffering human being. Some of that stuff is called pollen. I know that pollen gets a bad rap, but there's some aspects of pollen that maybe, and this is not the topic today, pine pollen may be one of the most incredible healing agents that we have on the planet. But I'll save that topic for another day. So if you look at the, if you look in the store and you see Manuka honey, or you see red clover, or clover honey. Maybe it says orange blossom. I've seen apple blossom honey. And so you think, my goodness, I bet you I know what they did. I bet you the beekeepers moved all their hives into this orchard, you know, full of almond trees, like an almond grove. And this is how they're doing it. They're letting the bees, you know, cross-pollinate and dance around from blossom to blossom so the almond trees can make some beautiful almonds. Well, that's right. And so those bees, they only come in contact with one unique type of nectar. But I kind of wondered myself, okay, Is this the way it's always been? No. Usually bees are going to visit about, 1,000 different types of plants. So there's this very, very broad sophistication of pollen they come in contact with. Anyway, the type of honey that I'm convinced you need to look for is called wildflower honey. What does it mean, wildflower? If you happen to go into the woods and you see 25 different types of flowers, especially during the springtime when they tend to blossom, well, that's a variety. It's not just one type of honey called alfalfa honey. Oh, no. This makes it quite a bit more sophisticated. So when I read that, when I thought about that story about Samuel, I thought to myself, can honey really do that to a person? Can honey brighten a person's countenance? What is honey? Well, let me read you some studies right here. And so, as I'm kind of pouring through some of the scientific research, I just kind of stand back and or sit and look in awe at the great power of God's very creation. He's given us something so incredible. I'm just so thankful that we have men and women that love to make a place to live for bees. They'll make their own place to live, but if they have a hive and it's out in the woods, I'm thinking, oh, you're doing the world a favor. Let me read this to you right here. And I'm not going to read each and every reference unless you just demand that I do, but just kind of sit back and I want you to soak this stuff up. But what I want you to look for is wild flower honey. And I want that honey to look almost kind of dirty and hazy and thick, because that's what you want. You want all the nutrients, all the vitamins, all the minerals, all the pollen, and all the unique properties of the plant that the little honeybee has regurgitated into the honey. I know that didn't sound good, but this is God's design. And what are we going to do today? Let's find out who's smarter, man's concoctions or God's natural creations that men and women have learned to use over the last, humpteen hundreds of years. Okay, study number one. 32 children that had pyomyositis abscesses. That's just a fancy term for pus coming out of sores and abscesses. That's bad. Oh, that's bad. If you have a young child that has a pus-filled abscess on their body, yeah, you're pretty frantic. You're asking for help. Doctor, save my little daughter's life. So 32 children with pyomyositis abscesses were split into two random treatment groups. The abscess cavities were packed twice a day with either wildflower honey, or they used a drug called Eusol. And so the wildflower honey was on the gauze, and the Eusol, which is a man-made chemical solution, was applied to these abscesses. And so I didn't know what Eusol was, so I said, I'm going to look that up. Eusol is an antiseptic solution prepared from chlorinated lime and boric acid. It's used to treat wounds. You like the idea of boric acid and chlorinated lime on your body? And so the honey-treated wounds, they healed faster, and the length of time in the hospital was shorter. That is always a bonus than those treated with Eusol. Isn't that interesting? Here's another one. 88 people were enrolled in a non-randomized, open-label, side-by-side comparison of various forms of second-intention healing of donor site for split-thickness skin grafts. What that means is people that had bad infections and they had to skin, the strep infection and cut it out of them, they had to come back and do a skin graft. Okay, are you with me? And they want to find out what happened here. The honey-impregnated gauzes showed faster epithelialization time and a lower level of pain than all the other methods used. Hey, I'm going to take note of that. I'm kind of wondering to myself, which one of these treatments was the cheapest? the answer to that. That would be the wildflower honey. Here's another one. There was a trial with 60 patients that had chronic, complicated surgical or acute traumatic wounds. They found that honey was easy to apply. Well, of course it's easy to apply. You could basically take a butter knife and cover the wound with it if you want to, or butter up the gauze and just lay it on top of it. I would call that easy. Can you train patients how to do that? Well, of course you can. Do you have to have a wound care specialist come and butter the honey onto the gauze and lay it on the wound? No, do it yourself if you want to. If you want to follow your doctor's advice, then do that also. Does anybody listening this morning want to have a chronic, complicated surgical wound? No, that's just fancy talk for. Ever since I had this surgery, I can't get the surgical incision to heal. It's infected. And I can tell you from... Do you know what is the number one location to go to if you want to get sick? Where would you guess? Well, it's the hospital. If you go to visit someone in the hospital, I'm going to recommend that we wrap your hands in surgical gloves and wrap them in duct tape and tape them to your body so you can't touch anything. Then you might make it. But the latest study that I read showed if you go to the hospital's bathroom, you're asking for it, buddy, because that's where all the bacteria and the viruses live that are completely resistant to antibiotics, and they're resistant, or the viruses are resistant to the antiviral drugs. You may not think this is a problem. Well, I can guarantee you're going to find out real quick if you go to the hospital and go visit the bathroom and use the bathroom and touch the doorknob. You can't be shocked or surprised if you have like a serious health problem after that. So these people, the 88 people, the 60 patients with chronic complicated surgical wounds, they found that honey was easy to apply and it kept the wounds clean. It stopped the infection and it was shown to be exceptionally safe in one study. Okay, take note of that, Roy. Here's another one. 105 people participated in a single center, open label, randomized, controlled trial in the treatment of honey for wounds. The honey, and these were bad wounds too. I won't read you how nasty they were, but just use your vivid imagination. Just think, oh my goodness, I do not want that on my leg. The honey treated group's wounds healed significantly faster in 100 days. Now, before you jump the gun and say, hey, Dr. Morgan, that doesn't sound too good that 100 days is the healing time for a wicked wound with honey. Okay. Point well taken. Let's just say that's a hair over 3 months. But what did it take for the control group that was given all the drugs? 140 days. Would you like to have an additional 40 days of pain and suffering and non-healing? No. Here's another one right here. 108 people with venous leg ulcers. They engaged in a multi-center, open-label, randomized controlled trial of honey treatment compared with the treatment of choice, which is called intracyte gel. There was increased incidence of healing, effective desloughing, and lower infection rates in the honey treated group. Okay. 15 people with pressure ulcers. Now, who would these be? They could be anyone that you know and love that's in a nursing home facility right now, or maybe a rehab hospital, or they've had a stroke, or they're paralyzed, or they've had a severe injury where they're in bed, or they've had a terrific life-changing accident where they're paralyzed from the neck down. So 15 people with pressure ulcers were treated with honey, and 11 were treated with, 11 of these people with pressure ulcers were treated with a substance called ethoxydiaminoacridine plus nitrophorazone dressings. I know I butchered that. I'm so sorry. The honey group healing was approximately 4 times faster than that of the pharmaceutical group. I'm sure that doesn't sound impressive, but man, does that impress me. So what type of honey are you going to look for? Wildflower honey. Because if you get clover or orange blossom or alfalfa, you're probably getting Roundup and chemicals and herbicides and pesticide residue. You can't afford to do that to yourself, folks. Yes, honey's great, but not if it's contaminated with the residue of pesticides. Okay, here's another one right here. Okay, only, and I'm trying to cover both angles, because I'm not trying to just hit you with this right here where, you know, you believe that there's no downside to honey, because I found one right here. There was 1 out of 20 patients in a honey group that developed this intolerable oral mucositis when receiving radiation. Okay? So these people are getting radiation treatment for cancer, and only one of them had a very, very severe problem when they used the honey. What that means to you is, instead of having all 20 people that are getting radiation over their oral cavity having horrible, intolerable mucositis, 19 of them didn't have that problem when they used honey in the mouth. And they said this was a better outcome than using lidocaine. And I looked at that and I thought, are you kidding me? You mean that was one way to end human suffering when you're receiving radiation treatments? The answer is yes. See there, there's proof to you that God loves us and He cares about us, because when you look around, all these things, living plants, He created for us because He loves us and He cares about us. Does He care about evil people? Absolutely. Does He care about good people? Yes. Okay. Okay, here's one right here. Oh, man, you talk about the ones with diabetic foot wounds and ulcers and sores and infections that won't heal. Phenomenal research. Let me see. I think I got this. Well, I may have this wrong. A number of other studies have been conducted on the treatment of diabetic foot ulcers and all found comparable outcomes. Okay, I got that one out of order. Okay, here's an example right here. I'm back on track now. All right. 60 people with limb-threatening diabetic infections. Do you know what it means to have a limb-threatening diabetic infection? That means if something doesn't happen, we're going to have to cut your leg off. I do not like the sound of that. I don't want your toes removed. I don't want your foot cut in half. I don't want you to remove the lower half of your leg. I don't want you having amputations. I don't. And so what they did was 60 people with limb-threatening diabetic infections, they were split into three groups. Okay? Number one, those that had full-thickness skin ulcers. That means an ulcer had eaten a hole through the entire thickness of the skin. Are you with me? Here's the group number two. These are ones that had deep tissue infections. They just weren't just the skin wasn't eaten. They went all the way down to where they had osteomyelitis. And that means that's a bad news Magruder infection of the bone. Okay? And number three, those diabetics with these wounds that had developed gangrene. That is bad to develop gangrene. Of course, you know that to be true. And so, in group one, these are the ones that had these big honking ulcers on their skin. Now, what happened? Oh, here's the results. Oh, my goodness. All the ulcers in group one healed. That's called a 100% cure rate. I hope you remember this. You're thinking this could never happen to you? Well, you know, I read a study not that long ago that shows if you take a statin drug for 7 years, on average, there's a pretty good chance you're going to develop adult onset type 2 diabetes. I'm just curious, did your doctor ever discuss that with you, that we want you on a drug to lower your cholesterol, but the side effect is you'll develop diabetes? Well, one of the complications of diabetes is you just don't heal. Okay, the group two was a deep tissue infection that had osteomyelitis. That means bone infection. This one didn't turn out so good. Only 92% of the people in group two healed. I can promise you right now, if they had a drug that showed 92% healing on people that had diabetes, where the ulcerated wounds and infected wounds went all the way down to the bone, then that would be on every billboard across America as the greatest healing agent of all time. Okay, all the people in group three healed, after they surgically or a surgical excision and the debridement of the necrotic tissue, and they treat it with honey ointment, which also in this study there was a little bit of royal jelly in there. I thought to myself, this is just incredible. So they cut and trimmed all the gangrene away and then rubbed honey all over these diabetics with these infections, and they healed. That's 100% healing. I bet you're thinking I'm making this up. Isn't this phenomenal? Okay. Okay, 78 people, ages 10 to 50, with burns on less than 50% of the body, were split into two groups. One group received honey dressings. What does that mean to you? That means they put honey on some gauze and covered the wound. Simple as that. The other group, they got one of the most powerful drugs that's in medicine right now for healing burns and wounds. It's called silver. You got that right, silver. Comes from the element silver. Sulfadiazine, SSD, silver sulfadiazine. You with me? One group got honey, one group got silver sulfadiazine. Okay, the average healing duration in honey-treated patients was 18 days. You're probably going to say, that doesn't sound too fast, Dr. Morgan. Are you kidding me? That's incredible. So the average duration of healing with honey-treated patients was 18 days. And with those that use the medical preparation, the sulfadiazine or the silver sulfadiazine, that took 33 days. Man. Wounds and all who received treatment within 1 hour of the burn were treated with honey, and they became sterile in less than 7 days. That means they could not find any longer any trace of a staph or a strep or an enterococcus or pseudomonas infection. None in the silver sulfadiazine were sterile. All the honey-treated wounds became sterile within 21 days, but only 36% of those in the silver sulfadiazine group. That's incredible. Those that were treated with the honey, there was faster healing, no infection, less scarring. That may be something that you want to consider if you have an abrasion or a cut or a laceration or any type of traumatic injury or a tear. Do you want to have a lot of scar tissue afterwards where it doesn't look so pretty? Well, that's what they're saying, that the use of honey greatly reduces that. Okay, here's another one right here. A randomized double-blind clinical trial among gold mine workers in South Africa was carried out using honey to treat shallow wounds and abrasions. The honey was found to be just as effective as the anthracite gel in healing, but the cost of the honey was approximately 49 cents. That's the equivalent of the South African rand, which I guess is their dollar. So the cost of the honey for the wounds was 49 cents versus $12.03 for the anthracite gel. Interesting. Here's another one. And I am very, very sympathetic to this topic right here. It is becoming so common. I hear people tell me their stories all the time. A lot of them are just very innocent victims. But nonetheless, this is still, you know, the world we're living in. Okay. In a clinical trial using honey to treat labial herpes, and of course, herpes would be a sexually transmitted disease. Okay, here we go. It says those that were treated with honey were found to... Okay. I didn't read that right. I'm sorry. Let me start over. In a clinical trial using honey to treat labial herpes, they measured the duration of the attacks, the degree of pain that men don't have labial herpes. They have a different form or a different body part, They looked at the occurrence of the crusting and the mean healing time with honey. They showed 35... No, that I'm just too wordy. Okay, anyway, I'm just trying to explain to you that using the raw wildflower honey was very, very effective with labial herpes and also with genital herpes. And of course, compared to drugs, the drug is called acyclovir. That is an antiviral prescription drug. Has a lot of side effects. Actually, scratch that last term, side effect. Actually, it has a lot of normal bad effects when you take it. See, drugs don't have side effects. That's just what they normally do. That's just the normal effect of consuming a drug. So if you feel bad from taking it, that's just normal. That's not a side effect. That's just the normal operating standard for that drug. So when people had gentle herpes and the doctors used acyclovir, compared with honey, gentle herpes, 53% faster healing, 59% better healing when they used honey as compared to acyclovir. Isn't that interesting? Well, how do you take care of gentle herpes? Well, in this study, what they did was a little bit of sterile gauze, probably from cotton. You just take a butter knife and put some honey on it. You don't even have to do that. Drip it all over the gauze and then apply it to where you have the herpes infection. Bam, goes away. Better than acyclovir. Of course, if I did a cost analysis, one's going to cost about 1,000,000 percentage points more than the other. I'll let you guess which one that is. Now, this next one got my attention also. 30 people, and I realize some of these are small studies, which a lot of times when healthcare professionals look at small studies, they go, that's just not even significant. We need a clinical trial of 80 million people before we can determine if it's effective. I'm going to let you decide what you want to believe with this right here. And so I'm just telling you, this is a small study. There were 30 people. There were 20 males and 10 females. And they had a condition called seborrheic dermatitis and pretty bad dandruff. Well, how do they treat them? A topical application of raw honey. The patients had presented with scaling, itching, and hair loss. Diluted raw honey. 90% honey diluted with warm water into a manageable wash. It was used every other day for 4 weeks, and it was left on the person's scalp or their skin for 3 hours before rinsing with warm water. Half of the patients acted as controls. In all the people using honey, itching was relieved and scaling disappeared all within 1 week. That is impressive, friends. And hair loss was reduced. Within 2 weeks, the skin lesions healed and disappeared. The honey-treated patients were treated prophylactically for 6 months afterward with one application of honey per week. I think you know what this is saying. None of the 15 patients treated with honey, they relapsed. Okay, here's another one right here. I'm switching gears kind of, but you know, the topic is wildflower honey. In a clinical trial of 139 children, honey was found to be more effective than dextromethorphan and diphenhydramine in alleviating nighttime cough due to upper respiratory tract infections. The reason I thought this was almost kind of comical is they asked parents what they thought. It says, parents, though, have generally reported honey to be better than pharmaceuticals. That's in small printed parentheses. I'm going, are you kidding me? I think I'm going to believe the parents over the pharmaceutical companies on that one also. Now, listen. This is a kind of switching gears also. I don't know this is going to blow your mind, but, you know, just consider this. And you tell me what you think about it. Honey, as a consistent additive to food, has shown remarkable results in medical trials. Here's one study right here. One group of 58 boys, 29 of those 58 boys was given 2 tablespoons of honey each day. I wonder if the boys complained about that. You think they said yuck? No. They were like Jonathan. Their countenance was probably brightened. It says they were given 1 tablespoon in the morning and 1 in the evening. I didn't read enough of the study to find out how they gave it to him, but, you know, this ain't rocket science. They probably stirred into something, or they gave him, you know, tea or something. All received the same diet, all the same exercise, and all had the same rest, meaning all the variables were the same. All were the same age and in generally good health. The group receiving the honey after 1 year, they showed an 8.5% increase in hemoglobin. So they made this observation that when they drew their blood hemoglobin was a little bit better. They all of them had an overall increase in vitality, energy, and general appearance. You know, I kind of think to myself, you know, sometimes I'll try to be funny with patients and I'll say something kind of sarcastically. I know I shouldn't do that. Forgive me. But I'll say, has your doctor talked to you about vitality and healing and rejuvenation and energy production and clear thinking? And, you know, it never happens. I haven't had one person in 30 years tell me, Dr. Morgan, I went to my doctor and I told him that I have been exhausted for 3 years and I can't get my strength back ever since I came down with a bad case of mono and I just feel like I can't recover and now I'm so depressed. And all my doctor wants to do is talk about vitality and energy and healing and rejuvenation. Well, that doesn't happen. Okay. Honey is also exceptionally effective in respiratory ailments. And here's a study from Bulgaria. Now, just because it's a Bulgarian study, don't poo-poo that and say they're not sophisticated like we are. Are you kidding me? They're great. A Bulgarian study of 17,862 patients. They found that honey was effective in improving chronic bronchitis, asthmatic bronchitis, bronchial asthma, chronic and allergic rhinitis, and sinusitis. It is also effective in the treatment of colds, flu, respiratory infections, and generally depressed immune problems. Well, isn't that interesting? But what if you have a young daughter that has asthma and you cannot figure out the reason why? Of course, it doesn't have anything to do with her drinking Dr. Peppers and Cokes all day long and only eating, you know, Twinkies and donuts. That has nothing to do with it whatsoever. I mean, forbid that we should give the child vegetables and fruit. I'm trying to think of the study that I read the other day. It was about a chronic infections that never go away. And in this study, they showed one of the greatest predictable factors on who's going to have the most infections is going to be those that eat zero amount of fruit. Well, I'm kind of working it backwards, but I thought to myself, oh, that's intriguing, Roy. What do you think that means? People that eat no fruit have the most infections. What am I supposed to learn from this? So does that mean we might consider an orange or an apple or, you know, blueberries occasionally? I think so. Okay. Results have been good in clinical practice as well. The Department of Pediatric Oncology at Children's Hospital at the University of Bonn, that would probably be Germany, they regularly use honey in the healing of wounds impaired by chemotherapy, and they've been highly successful. I can guarantee you, if you put your mind to it right now, you can think of somebody from church that you love very much that is having an extremely rough go right now when it comes to radiation treatments or chemotherapy or surgery. And so when I read that the other day, that the number one location where you're going to get sick if you go into it is the hospital bathroom, okay? Can I suggest that you go to the bathroom before you go into the hospital? Maybe I could suggest that you would hold it and then leave when you can't hold it any longer. Don't touch anything. Maybe you can take like a honey sterilized gauze to touch the hospital elevator button. Anyway, but there's a lot of people that, you know, they're suffering right now and they're never given these options. I've got to believe that if you can just honestly read these studies like I am and ask yourself, Is there any option other than what I'm getting? My husband can't get well. These infections never go away. He's been in the hospital for 4 months. He's sick. He's dying. Well, I just can't throw this away. It's the truth. Honey, is that effective? Okay. Here's one right here. Now, this is a small study also. They were able to con the hospital staff into allowing 8 patients that had severe leg ulcerations to please let us use honey on these. What did they find out? Ulcer size decreased by 60%, and odor was eliminated and pain was reduced. And I can't find where I read the amount of time it took on that, so I'm sorry I can't give that to you. I have been known to do that before, is to read the length of time, and I'm thinking, well, where did I write that down? I didn't. That's my fault. So I can't give that information to you. Here's one right here. This is a story I think is interesting. There was a patient or an individual that had this chronic wound, and the name of the wound was Dystrophis epidermolysis bullosa. They treated the patient for 20 years. The wound would never heal. It would never close. Never. This person had been suffering with a medical condition of a non-healing wound and an ulcer for 20 years. Well, you already know what the punchline is, don't you? 20 years of no success despite spending all of her money on all the physicians. If only Jesus could walk by her and she could reach out and touch the hem of his robe, she too could be healed. But some crazy nut job physician recommended this, a honey impregnated dressing. That's crazy, dude. Well, guess what happened? The wound healed and closed completely in 15 weeks. And after 20 years of no healing, oh, that is incredible. You talk about incredible. I love it. Folks, I have to apologize. I just now looked at the clock. I've been talking about this for 40 minutes now. Please forgive me. If you want to call me on the phone line right now, you can. And I'll be happy to assist you any way possible. This program is called Health Essentials. I'm your host, Dr. Roy Morgan. I had a very, very good visit yesterday with Wynn at the Granary over in Tyler. The guy has got so much enthusiasm for life. He smiles nonstop. I think he's just a beautiful human being. But I really enjoyed visiting with Wynn over at the Granary in Tyler. The phone number here at the station is 903-586-5257, and there's a phone line open. So if you want to call me and ask a question, now is the time to do so. And I'll get you right in. It won't take long at all. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning.
How are you today?
I'm doing great, but my husband's not doing so well.
Oh, dear. Well, how can I help him?
He is having tendonitis in his hands and wrist, and I was wondering what would be the best anti-inflammatory for that.
If it's in his hands and wrist, the first organ that I look at is called the kidneys. I know this is not going to make sense to you, but if the kidneys cannot filter impurities from the bloodstream, what will happen is you'll have all this waste. It tends to build up in the hands. I had a woman that I saw recently, and her hand pain was so severe that she was literally crippled in her hands because the pain was so intense. And the only two things that when I examined her that I found was her kidneys were not doing their job properly, and then number two, she was highly allergic to wheat. Now, she didn't know this before I came along, and so I said, hey, this is just one grand experiment. Give it a shot, see what happens. So to the best of my knowledge, she's 100% pain-free. Her hands no longer hurt. And she has no issues. So if you can get to the root cause of the problem, then you can start to see a significant difference. And so here's my idea that I'm going to float your direction.
He can't even button the top button on his dress shirts. And he's always worked with his hands.
Does he like to eat vegetables?
Yes.
Do you think he would be willing to eat one really, really big green salad a day?
Yes.
Because if he does, we're going to flood his body with maybe life-changing minerals. It's going to be really hard to get enough minerals in him without a salad. So if he could do that, okay. if he says, you know, sweetheart, I really think I'd like to have some tuna fish on that or some sardines or some chicken, that's all good. And if you use an olive oil-based dressing, you will extract more nutrients and more minerals than if you did not.
I remember you talking about that a few weeks ago.
You mean you remember that?
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome. Good. The other thing that I want to talk him into is we've got to start cleaning his kidneys and his liver and his blood. Now, this is only my opinion, but it's cheap, it's effective, or it's free. But if he would start drinking about 3 cups of dandelion root tea every day, then I can tell you what's going to happen. We're going to start doing some deep cleaning on his liver and his kidneys and his blood. It's a tremendous blood purifier. And so anytime the hands have a lot of pain in them, I always train myself to say, Roy, what is going on with the liver or the kidneys or the blood? And so the body's just screaming and crying out that we've got to do something to clean his blood. And so dandelion tea would work.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure Mountain Dew would not clean the blood. You know what? I don't think that's a problem. I know. I'm just joking about that. But I had two men 1 week come to see me with severe pain all over their body. And both of them were drinking about 6 Mountain Dews a day, and within 3 days they were pain-free just by giving up Mountain Dews. I'm going, hey,
this
healing business is fun.
Let me ask you if this makes a difference, because he says that he really doesn't have pain. It's just more like numbness and no strength, and I guess maybe like tingling.
Well, whatever's going on, if it's not severe pain that's limiting him, but he's got numbness and tingling, then we know that there's inflammation, there's swelling. It's just a matter of what is the root of it. So a lot of times if I can convince a person to go more high doses of vegetables, a little bit of fruit, and clean, wholesome meat, if I can convince a person to give up sugar and grains, all we can do is put to the test and see if your husband gets to be in a much, much better place. But it may be that what he really needs right now is you to take 1 tablespoon of extra virgin olive oil, place it in a bowl, and probably put about 4 or 5 drops of the essential oil of lemon, which is cheap and easy to come by.
Yes.
And then maybe good. I knew you were a clever girl. And then maybe 4 or 5 drops of eucalyptus oil. And the other one, there's a type of oil called birch oil. I don't really see that a lot, but you could order it on the internet easily.
No.
But you know what a birch tree is? Like in Colorado?
Yes.
Let's just say there's birch trees. So if you take a birch oil and put about 5 drops in that, have him start rubbing. Well, actually, probably what he needs to do, he needs to just kick back and relax. And you need to rub that thoroughly into his hands and fingers and wrists and forearms, right? If you'll do that several times a day, let's see if a lot of this numbness and tingling and crippling effect on his hands starts to dissipate and go away. Hey, he's got nothing to lose.
That's right.
I know what you're thinking, though. He's gonna turn to you and say, sweetheart, I do not like the idea of you rubbing me with your gorgeous fingertips all over my hands. No, you know what I mean. But if you would do that for him, let's see if we can have a very therapeutic healing event. But I still would work it backwards and say, what is stressing his kidneys and his liver? There has to be something. Okay. I mean, I've been doing this for 30 years now, and there's just no way that I'm going to think otherwise. I mean, I could be wrong, but you've got to get to the core of the issue. If you don't, that's where you're tempted just to say, what's the greatest pharmaceutical anti-inflammatory? Well, they could give you cortisone, and they can give you all sorts of drugs.
Stay away from,
Yeah.
Way to stay away from the drugs.
Well, that's because you love and care about the well-being of your husband. Plus, those drugs will destroy the liver and the kidneys just about every time. And he needs to have kidneys to have tremendous vitality. Anyway, those are some simple things.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for your phone call this morning. Give my best to your husband.
All righty.
Bye-bye. If you'd like to join me on the radio, there is a phone line officially open at 903-586-5257. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
Yes, good morning.
I've been talking to you. I've been to your office, and you're helping me with my rheumatoid. I went and got last week a complete blood work, and I wanted you to tell me what you think about this, and here I'm reading it. White blood cells, the parameters are 4.5 to 11.0, and mine is 4.4.
That means that you have something that's a continual ongoing burden on your immune system. Most likely a low-grade infection that's not clearing up, not going away.
Okay, let me read you the rest of it. I got that part there. Red blood cells. The parameters are 4.50 to 5.90, and mine is 4.32.
You probably have some type of a low-grade infection, because low-grade infections, by their very nature, they like to eat your blood. Not all infections, but there's some very unique ones that are easy to read about.
Okay.
They prefer to eat the blood. That's called a hemolytic infection.
Okay, I'm going to go on through this, and then I want you to tell me what I should be doing. Hemoglobin. Parameter is 13.5 to 17.5, and mine is 13.4.
Okay, most likely you have a low-grade infection that's eating your blood and stressing your immune system. Address that, but you're anemic right now. I don't care what the hematologist says so much about you. I care about what's going on with you.
Yeah,
my allegiance is to making sure that you get your strength back. So we know that your blood is anemic. It's a little bit poor on nutrients, so
okay.
We've got to find a way to get you back in balance.
Yeah, okay, all right. Hematocrit. Okay, the parameter is 41.0 to 53.0, and mine is 38.7.
Once again, this is showing consistent theme that you're anemic right now. Your blood is weak. It's not strong like it needs to be. It's not built up. It's kind of knocked down a notch or two. You got tired blood. You're anemic.
Okay.
So you're trying to get to what is going to be the biggest bang for the buck. And one thing that I might add.
Yeah.
There's a hormone that's produced by your kidneys. It's called erythropoietin. Sometimes it's called EPO for short. And a lot of athletes, like Tour de France bicycle racers,
yeah,
they like to get a shot of that before a big race, because what happens if they do, they have a whole lot more blood floating around their bloodstream so they can carry more oxygen. This is a way to kind of enhance their athletic performance. It's like a performance-enhancing drug. So why do they do it? Because the more blood you have, the more oxygen you can carry.
Okay.
So I would look at your kidneys.
Okay, let me read you the rest of them, and then I want you to give me a diagnosis. MCV, fluid FL on the end. Parameters are 79.3 to 94.8. Mine's 89.6.
Okay. That's not necessarily bad.
No. MCHPG, parameters 26.0 to 34.0, and mine is 31.1.
That's
fine. These are all within the parameters.
Right. Mm-hmm.
MCHC, GM/DL. Parameters 31.0 to 37.0, and mine is 34.7, which is within the parameters. Now, here's another. RDW percent.
Yeah, that's going to be a little bit elevated.
No, mine is low. 11.5 to 14.5 is the parameters. Mine is 11.2.
Okay. Well, I just knew it was going to be a little bit elevated because of an iron deficiency or anemia.
Okay.
So you've got all these organs in your body that are designed to, for example, you have an organ over on the left side of your body, kind of beneath your heart, called the spleen.
Okay.
And the spleen is incredible, absolutely incredible when it comes to somebody having rheumatoid arthritis. So when the spleen doesn't work right, it cannot filter out all the impurities from your immune system or from your lymphatic system. And so when the spleen begins to struggle, you start noticing that your blood quality suffers, because one of the roles of the spleen is to continually recycle all the iron and components that your body can reuse so it can build a whole bunch of more new red blood cells. When you were younger, you used to play football and probably run track and play baseball, didn't you?
Yes.
I knew it. So do you know what it's like to have a stitch in your side?
Yes.
Well, that's your spleen contracting, because your spleen carries about a 5-minute reserve of energy or oxygen. So if you're sprinting down the sideline after an interception and you start to get this little sharp pain on the left side, that's your spleen contracting to kind of give you a shot of oxygen so you can make it to the end zone.
All right. Now let me read you the rest. Platelets, K/UL, parameters 150 to 450, minus 256.
That's good.
MPV, UM3 is what it is, 7.5 to 10.7, minus 7.8, which is within the parameters.
Yeah, lower end of normal, though.
Yeah, SIGs, relative percent, 36 to 66, and minus 47.
Okay.
Lymphocytes, relative, 24 to 44 and minus 43 near the high.
See, that's a clue right there that you probably have your infection's probably a viral load.
Okay. Monocytes, relative.
Yeah.
0 to 10, minus 8. Eosinophils, relative. 0 to 5 and minus 2. Basophils, relative, 0 to 2 and minus 0, right on the low end of it. And
well,
that's all of that.
Obviously, I can't diagnose you over the radio.
Sure,
it's just impossible. But do you have enough clues on your blood work? And I'm sure your doctor looked at all that and said, let me tell you what's going on, sir. Because if I don't have anything else, let me just say this right here. You have got some degree of anemia. Something is keeping your immune system from working properly. So when your white blood cell count is below 5, something is beating you down and stressing and straining your immune system. And that's probably what your doctor told you. Then he said, the other clue that we have here is your lymphocyte count. Up in the 40s, that's strongly suggestive that you're harboring some type of a low-grade viral infection that's not going away. But the problem is, if you have a low-grade viral infection, it will completely deplete you of all your resources and put stress and strain on you. Basically, what I'm saying is it'll keep you from getting the results that you want and actually healing and recovering. So those are clues right there. And so your doctor told you all that, though, didn't he?
No, I'm going to tell you what he says here on this. White blood count is a little lower than what it has been. He says, have you been ill lately? If not, simply recheck white blood count in 3 weeks. I got it supposed to go back in 3 weeks. I guess he's going to check the white blood. Another blood work in. That's the reason I'm calling you, to see what your suggestion would be.
Well, you're going to have to follow up with your doctor and ask the questions.
Sure.
Why would my white blood cell count be low? What are the factors involved with that? Is there anything I can do to make myself not anemic? And, can I give you an example? I know this is going to come out of left field, and you're probably going to shake your head at me and go, you're nuts. But I read a study not that terribly long ago for about the third time, and they showed if an individual is taking one baby aspirin a day, then it's just going to be a given. You know everybody's different. Some people have stronger constitutions, some people have weaker. But if you're taking one baby aspirin a day, then you're going to lose easily 1/2 teaspoon of blood to 1.5 tablespoons. It just leaks through the arteries. It goes anywhere it wants, but it's blood that you can't use, so you got to leak somewhere.
All right. Well, let me tell you about that.
Unfortunately, we're completely out of time. I'm so sorry.
Okay.
If you will, we'll pick it up next week. All right.
I appreciate your help.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Have a blessed
week. I want to hear the rest of it. Thank you, buddy. You too. Bye bye. All right, you're listening to Health Essentials, and I'm your host, Dr. Roy Morgan. Sorry I ran over just a little bit, but this is your radio station, KBGS, FM 90.3, Jacksonville, Tyler, and Longview.